Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Gymnastic. So I don't know how much exercise you get. I know you hear about 20 hours out of the day.
Where are we going with all of this?
Well, because we're talking about healthy eating this hour, and I just wanted to know if, and our Blue Runner Gumbo opinion poll is asking people, are you worried about your weight? And 73% are saying yes, 27% are saying no. No could mean I'm in shape and I watch what I eat. No, it could mean I eat whatever I want and I don't care.
Yeah, you could be fat and happy, or you could be in shape and happy.
You know, Dean Wormer once said, what is it, fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life? I think that's the exact way to go through life.
So, oh, it is, huh?
Yes, it is. So before we let you go, bottom line, you eat whatever you want and you don't appear to be overweight to me. You just control it with quantity?
Yeah, you know, now I used to be able to eat anything as much as I wanted all the time. Now I really just have to watch portion size. And the real key to me is when I get over, you know, my kind of threshold where I start feeling my belly just bulging and I want to lose a few pounds,
right.
I have no snacks, no seconds, and no sweets.
I took the first step yesterday by eliminating ice cream from my diet, and I thought I'd move on from there. Let's welcome in David Katz.
Good luck with that.
Seemed like a good thing. Director of the Yale University Prevention Research Center and founder of the True Health Initiative. Good morning, Doc.
Tommy, how are you? I think the eating the clown thing sounds funny to me.
Does it?
It does, yeah.
Tell me about the health initiative. What is the True Health Initiative?
So, you know, frankly, the conversation you were just having, and it, you know, was amusing. I enjoyed it. But, you know, it does speak to sort of a dark concern, and that is perennial debate in our society about what's good to eat, what's important, what's not. And I think part of the folklore is that no two nutrition experts agree about anything. And in particular, you could pick your hero at one end of the spectrum who likes low carb or paleo diets, or you could pick your hero at the other end of the spectrum who's maybe a vegan and eats a, you know, plant exclusive diet. You'd point to those two and say, hey, they clearly don't agree about anything. And it's all wrong. The reality is that all around the world, leading experts in good nutrition, across that full expanse, by the way, all the way from paleo to vegan, agree much more than they disagree. So the True Health Initiative is all about that. It's a global nonprofit headquartered here. I founded it. And I started inviting colleagues, you know, who have all different dietary practices but are all genuinely expert in the health effects of diet and the sustainability of diet, and asking them, are you willing to stand up and be counted? Can we link arms and sing Kumbaya and say, you know, we agree about 95% of everything. And let me paint a picture for you, Tommy. So, you know, people really expert in the paleo diet, when it's time to eat, they get in line, they fill their plate with a wide variety of unprocessed plant foods, and then they leave some room for antelope or venison or bison or wild salmon. Their vegan counterparts fill their plates with all the same plant foods, and where the wild salmon would otherwise go, they've got beans or lentils. Those two plates look much more like one another than either looks anything like the glow-in-the-dark junk the typical American, alas, is eating most days. And that's a point that needs to be made. So we are all about the fundamental truths of a health-promoting diet and lifestyle and the fact that there's massive global consensus. And here's why it matters. And then my soliloquy is done.
No, I'll tell you this. You're here to listen. We're here to listen and learn, David. Take as much time as you need.
Thanks, Tommy. All right. If we were simply to use the knowledge we have long had, the simple fundamental truths about healthy diet, healthy exercise, avoiding really harmful stuff like tobacco, and by the way, not drinking excessively. So, you know, I don't know that drunk all the time is quite the right way to go through life.
I was just kidding.
I know. If we would not smoke, eat well, and be active, we could eliminate 80% of all of the chronic disease and premature death that occurs in the United States.
Wait, hang on, now, David. I'm going to give you a TiVo moment on that. Say that again, please.
Yeah. So, and actually, Tommy, let me embellish this story. I trained in internal medicine, And then I went to Yale to do a second residency in preventive medicine and get my master's in public health. And I focused on the prevention of chronic disease. I completed that training in 1993, so 26 years ago. It was in 1993 that a paper was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association that really changed my life and career. The paper was entitled Actual Causes of Death in the United States. And what it pointed out was the stuff that we doctors put on death certificates in hospitals at night, heart attack, cancer, stroke, et cetera, those aren't really the causes of death. Those are effects. What we want to know is what's causing those diseases that cause the death, because that's the stuff we can fix. And what this paper pointed out was 10 factors they put on a list accounted for almost all of the premature deaths in our country, and they were all modifiable a quarter century ago. The first three were tobacco, diet, and physical activity, and they alone accounted for 80% of the premature deaths and chronic disease burden in our country.
Wow.
So making that point again, if we would not smoke, and most people don't, but some still do, if we would eat close to optimally, hardly anybody does, and if we would be active on a regular basis, and too few do that, we could eliminate 80% or more of all of the premature death and chronic disease that occurs in our country. Now, here's why that matters. Because, you know, I say this stuff, I'm a public health physician, it sounds like statistics, you know, it's not nearly as funny as eating a clown, so your eyes are starting to glaze over. But here's the thing, folks, ask yourself. So, you know, the problem with public health statistics is nobody loves the public. Who is that? Mm-hmm. Here's the thing, ask yourself, do you love somebody who's had heart disease? Do you love somebody who's had a stroke? Do you love somebody who's had a cancer diagnosis? Do you love somebody who's been diagnosed with diabetes? Do you love somebody who succumbed to dementia? The answer for almost everyone in our society is yes. So you can conjure to your mind's eye the face of someone you love. Maybe they're still with us. I hope they are. Maybe they're not. Maybe you remember the day you first got that news and went to the hospital or waited anxiously by the phone for updates. And what I'm telling you is we could have a future where 8 times in 10, our answer to that question, do you love somebody who's had one of these horrible things happen, would be no instead of yes if we simply acted on what we do. And by the way, again, I appreciate a good joke as much as the next guy, but it's about so much more than weight. It's about years in life and life in years. And these days, it's equally important to note, it's also about taking care of this beautiful planet of ours. All the same things about diet and lifestyle that are best for human health are best for the environment, best for the climate, best for sustainability. And that's a beautiful confluence. We have this incredible opportunity to advance the health of people and planet alike.
Let's take a break here, Doctor, if we can. If y'all have any questions or comments about this, I would love to hear from you at 260-1870, or you can text your comment or question in 870-870, and I'll pass it along. So 80% of premature deaths can be prevented, I guess. Doctor, is that accurate? Prevented?
Yeah, yeah. You know, ultimately, death finds us all, right? Valar Morghulis. But we can defer it. And, you know, what we don't want is to die prematurely. And so, yes, premature death can be prevented at least 80% of the time.
Tobacco?
Simply by
diet,
not smoking, eating well, being active.
All right, we'll pick it up here when we come back. I also want to know what glow-in-the-dark junk is, because that phrase jumped out at me.
Okay.
We're talking about healthy eating, nutrition. David Katz is our guest, director of the Yale University Prevention Research Center, founder of the Health Initiative. Nice enough to come back on with us. We'll be back moments from now, WWL. David Katz, our friend, director of the Yale University Prevention Research Center, and founder of the True Health Initiative, about eating healthy. He's already told us that 80% of premature deaths could be avoided. Premature death, because again, some of us are going to die. If you avoided tobacco, if you watched your diet, and if you were physically active. So, Doctor, before we get to the text and the questions, you used the phrase glow-in-the-dark junk earlier that people eat. Well, what would that be?
So, Tommy, let's start with what should people eat. And it's so simple. And by the way, my most recent book is The Truth About Food.
Okay.
And it's available on Amazon. People can get the Kindle version if they're so inclined. All proceeds go to support the True Health Initiative.
The Truth About Food.
The Truth About Food,
okay.
why why pandas eat bamboo and people get bamboozled. And the book crazily, the book crazily is 750 pages long, because I put in there not just everything I know, but how I know it. But I joke in the book and say this book could have been only 7 words long, and they wouldn't have even been my words. They would have been Michael Pollan's words: eat food, not too much, mostly plants, because that's pretty much right. So if your diet is mostly vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, lentils, nuts, and seeds, and if you mostly drink plain water when you're thirsty, you are going to be in much better shape than most people, period, end of story. So, you know, you want to eat some meat with that, fine. You want to eat some fish with that, fine. You want to eat some dairy with that, fine. But, you know, again, if your diet's mostly vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, lentils, nuts, and seeds, and plain water for thirst, you can't go too far wrong. So that would be true north, and that's really the position that the True Health Initiative maps out. And to get more on who's behind the True Health Initiative, folks can go to truehealthinitiative.org. But let's talk about glow-in-the-dark junk food. So here's something that has perplexed me for a long time, because I've always thought, I pity the fool that gets between a loving parent or grandparent and the well-being of a child they care about, right? I mean, you know, hell hath no fury like a mom or a dad worried about their kid. I always thought that. I mean, I've got 5 grown kids of my own. Certainly that's what I've seen in myself and my wife. And, I think that's just the way it is. I think lovingparentsandgrandparents.org could be the greatest special interest group the world has ever known. But here's the thing.
You're going to call me out here, doctor, so please go ahead.
All right. We've been told in no uncertain terms, in places as prominent as the cover of the New York Times Magazine, that our entire food supply is willfully engineered to be addictive in order to maximize the amount of eating we do for the sake of corporate profits.
No, wait, go into that a little bit, if I might.
Yeah,
what does that mean?
Yeah, well, what it means is there's something called the bliss point, which essentially is a combination of flavors and textures that have to be very cleverly worked into a processed food that maximally stimulates the appetite center in a part of the brain called the hypothalamus. Now, how do these food companies know they're achieving the bliss point? Believe it or not, Tommy, they've done experiments using functional MRI machines. So they actually have food scientists and PhDs in biochemistry working to test different formulations on subjects who sign up to do this. They do functional MRI scans of their brains to see what makes the appetite center in the ventromedial hypothalamus light up like a Christmas tree. And when they get that formula right, A, that's the product they sell us, and B, they get a bonus. But our bonus is we have epidemic obesity, epidemic diabetes, epidemic fatty liver disease, and not just in ourselves, but in our children. So from my point of view, not just as a public health physician, but as a father, we are mortgaging the future health of our children to fatten these corporate coffers, and that is unconscionable. And I've wondered for a hell of a long time, where is the outrage? Because this is a secret hiding in plain sight. So when I say glow-in-the-dark junk food,
on the MRIs.
I mean, literally, it makes the appetite center glow in the dark on an MRI scan, and it's designed to do that. Michael Moss is a Pulitzer Prize winning investigative journalist. He wrote that New York Times cover story entitled "The Extraordinary Science of Addictive Junk Food." I'll say it again because people may want to look that up. The Extraordinary Science of Addictive Junk Food. Usually when I want to find that piece, I just type into the Google search box Moss. His name is Michael Moss, M-O-S-S, and addictive, and it comes right up. Check that out. It's crazy. And so why are we putting up with that?
Wait, let me jump in for a second. When you say the hypothalamus and the MRI, is this due to some type of, getting it to light up, is this due to some type of chemical manipulation, or is this like mommy in the kitchen saying needs a little bit more salt, needs a little bit this, needs a little bit that? Is it all about taste, or is it more chemical manipulation?
Yeah, I would argue it's manipulation, but it's sort of hard to unbundle the two. If we go to bedrock here, Tommy, the reason we like what we like, the reason something tastes good, the reason something looks good, is because of what we're adapted to. So for example, throughout most of human history, it was hard to get enough to eat. We now have the opposite problem in modern society. We all get too much. But, you know, for most of the human experience, it was hard to get enough. We had to chase after it or find it. And it was hard to get lots of calories. So we tend to like foods that are dense in calories, and in particular, that means fatty food. It was really hard to get enough salt. You know that animals in nature will go to a salt lick because salt is pretty elusive. We now get too much. It was really hard to get concentrated sugar. The only place to find concentrated sugar was fresh fruit, and even there, it wasn't all that concentrated. Mm-hmm. So we, and by the way, one of the reasons we like sweet is because breast milk is sweet. So it's actually, it's the one taste preference we're all born with, because if you reject breast milk, you're not apt to live very long. So we're born with a preference for the taste of something we need to survive. So this is ultimately all about survival. The problem is we've flipped the environment so completely that all of these inclinations that fostered our survival in the past now cultivate our vulnerability to chronic disease and premature death. So we like salt, we get too much. We like sugar, we get too much. We like fat, we get too much. We like calories, we get too many. And we like variety. And what the big food companies do is essentially engineer a variety of flavors and textures into foods to create this bliss point, so that it puts our appetite into a state of overdrive it's never experienced before. So if you eat wholesome foods direct from nature, they fill you up on a reasonable number of calories. You were talking to your friend Dave at the beginning about how he controls his appetite and calories, and you know, he says he has to be attentive to it. Well, the simple fact is the easiest way to control the number of calories we eat is to fill up on a reasonable number. And one way to do that is to eat wholesome foods. The more you eat what are referred to these days as ultra-processed foods, the more vulnerable you become to this definitely intentional manipulation. Let's dial up the appetite center's response as high as we can get it to go and make people eat much more than they really need, because after all, the more they eat, the more they buy, the more they buy, the more we profit. And yes, there's going to be an awful lot of chronic disease as a result, but that's somebody else's problem.
So is the corollary to bringing this bliss point up as high as it can, is a corollary to that, no matter what, you'll never be satisfied again once that happens?
No, and that's the beauty of it. So I've long referred to something I call taste bud rehab. This is all totally fixable. Taste buds are adaptable little fellas. When they can't be with a food they love, they learn to love the food they're with. And this works in either direction, Tommy. So, you know, what the big food companies have done for decades in our country is get us so habituated to ever more processed food that we tend to think of it as normal. Let me give you a quick for instance. My wife and I were traveling. This was a few years ago. We were at some airport in between flights. We got hungry. We'd run out of food. We looked around for a place that offered something that was not glow-in-the-dark junk. The best we could do was a smoothie bar kind of thing. We each got a smoothie. I took one sip of mine, spit it out, and looked for a place to throw it all away. It was sickeningly sweet.
And because so you had retrained your taste buds, yeah.
Well, in my case, you know, they'd always been in good shape to begin with. But because I ate, you know, I got my sweets from a wholesome diet, this level of sweetness to me was like off the charts. I absolutely could not stomach it. But what it told me was this is the level of sweetness the typical American, you know, my friends and neighbors need to feel satisfied because they're so used to it. So that's what's going on here. It's like any addiction. Addiction, it has many traits, withdrawal, for example, but one of the most important is tolerance. The more you get, the more you need. So our food supply has been dialing up the sodium, dialing up the artificial flavorings, dialing up the added sugar, getting everybody used to those very high levels. I've done patient care for 25 years, and innumerable times have taken patients through taste bud rehab, where essentially, you know, you just start identifying sources of added sugar that you don't need, and replace those with better options. Nobody needs a marinara sauce or a salad dressing with added sugar. Nobody pours packets of sugar over lettuce. Nobody pours packets of sugar over spaghetti. But many of the commercial versions of those products have added sugar. So pick something else. So, you know, you can start to kind of dial down your exposure to sugar, salt, artificial ingredients in a way that doesn't really change the kind of food you're eating. It just directs you to better choices. Little by little, you kind of get your taste buds to come out of their coma, and they start saying, okay, this is a lesser amount of sugar, but it's plenty. I can taste it now. This is a lesser amount of salt. I can taste it. So totally reversible. And I really do think that's the critical thing. First, we need to know the truth about food for health, for sustainability, for vitality, for years in life, life in years, all that good stuff. Then we need to know how to get there from here. And I absolutely want everybody listening who hears this and thinks, okay, this is sounding like it might matter to me and my family. Yes, folks, you can get there from here. And the journey begins with the first step.
A couple of texts are coming in here. Do we confuse, or at least... It's a long text. Let me try to put it all together into one. Basically, we try to watch what we eat for appearances as opposed to health. And maybe if we looked at it from a health standpoint, we'd view it differently.
Yeah, absolutely. For a whole host of reasons. First, you know, some people are just sort of genetically predisposed to be heavier than others and may be quite healthy, you know, may be fit. And may eat well and, you know, just a little bit heavier than maybe they want to be or the rest of the world thinks they ought to be. And I think those folks have every right to love the skin they're in. Take good care of yourself, and size is size. By and large, if you take good care of yourself, you wind up being more or less right size. You know, the things that make us fit tend to make us unfat. And so I think the focus should be on health.
All right, we'll take a break. I'm sorry, doctor. Take a break. Pick it up right here. Focus on health. You got to love the skin you're in, and you got to train your taste buds to love the one they're with. We'll be back talking about healthy eating here on WWL. 941 Tommy Tucker, WWL. A text comes in and says, he is totally right about the taste buds. I was recently diagnosed with high blood pressure and I modified my salt intake and I use more fresh vegetables for seasoning, and now food that is even a little salty, such as processed food, is too salty for me. I enjoy the natural flavors of peppers and onions rather, and garlic, etc. He is David Katz, director of the Yale University Prevention Research Center, founder of the True Health Initiative. There is a lot of material here, and it will be available, because we're getting some text on this as well, as a podcast at WWL.com. So, Dr. David Katz, you were talking about health before we went to the break as opposed to appearance. And the only other thing I would throw in there and ask you is, I know I've heard people say often that, you know, when it comes to smoking or being overweight, exercising, etc., well, you got to die of something. But I think that carries with it the presumption that it's going to be like a bolt of lightning, and it excludes completely the quality of life situation, where it's not only about living longer, it's about living better, correct?
Totally correct, Tommy. Okay. I should just say amen. You know, so the phrase that I coined many years ago and use all the time is years in life, life in years. And yeah, That was sort of the comment I heard from patients who smoked over the years. You know, look, doc, I know I'm going to die sooner, but, you know, I enjoy smoking and I'm choosing to do it. I said, no, it's not about dying sooner. I've seen this happen. I've seen the people who are too short of breath to sit up in bed looking at me desperately for a way to, you know, rewind the clock and have another chance. I don't want you to be another one of those. And diet's the same. You know, we're talking about diabetes, which will change the quality of your life irrevocably. We're talking about cardiovascular disease, which will prevent you from having the energy to pick up your grandchildren. We're talking about strokes, which may leave half of your body no longer functioning and impair your ability to speak. We're talking about dementia. We're talking about things nobody wants. This is not, hey, I'm going to live my way and, you know, I'll check out a little earlier. No, we're talking the leading causes of premature death in our country and around the world now are chronic diseases, which means before ever they take years from your life, they siphon away life from your years. Nobody wants that. And I think an equally important point, my wife is French, grew up in southern France, spectacular cook. And so in our family, our mantra has always been love the food that loves you back. I mean, let's keep in mind, one of the world's healthiest cuisines is the so-called Mediterranean diet. And that means different things in different countries and to different people. But you know, the gist of it is a plant-predominant traditional diet, but lots of delicious recipes in Greece and in the Middle East and in Italy and in southern France. And so, you know, this is not about choosing to be healthy at the expense of loving food. This is, you know, we can all go through taste bud rehab. We can learn to appreciate natural flavors and get away from these ultra-processed glow-in-the-dark and make-your-hypothalamus-glow-on-MRI scan foods. And we literally can love the pleasure we get from food and love the pleasure we get from good health. And that's what this is about. It's not just that, you know, I'm going to die, you know, on this date as opposed to that date. No, it's about having a better life and paying it forward to the people you love. So, you know, if you share healthy diet, healthy lifestyle practices with your children, with your peers, they benefit as much as you do. And then your whole network enjoys those same blessings. And by the way, we absolutely know this to be true. There are five places around the world called blue zones where people most routinely live to be 100 years old. They don't get chronic disease. They go to sleep one night at age 102 after a hardworking day, which they're still capable of, and they just don't wake up the next morning. So they live long. They prosper with vitality. They go gentle into that good night in the fullness of time. And what they do is they don't smoke. They tend not to drink excessively. They eat optimally. They're physically active. They have strong social connections to one another. And they get enough sleep. They're not excessively stressed out. So there's a whole formula of lifestyle medicine there. This is accessible to all of us. And by the way, for my wife's fantastic recipes, they're all available to you. She has a website called cuisinicity.com. It's like Cuisine City, but with an I in the middle. So all of the Katz family greatest hits are right there. Everybody can go shopping.
Let me read you this text, because I'm a big fan of the birthday cake and the ice cream, Doc, which I'm guessing is not a really good thing.
Well, it depends how often you're at birthday parties.
A lot.
Tommy, a lot.
Anyway, let me read you the text. Seriously, it says, do you realize how much this would cost and how problematic it would be and how much time it would be to eat like this? Is it terribly difficult to do and accomplish, or does it just just require advanced planning? Doc, how does that work?
So my answer to that is, you know, okay, appreciate your point. As a public health guy, I've heard it a lot, and you're both right and wrong. So, you know, in our culture, on purpose, we make ultra-processed junk food and fast food especially inexpensive. So all of the financial incentives, if you will, are pointed in the wrong direction. But actually, just to be clear, the problem is not so much money as priorities and skill power, because a high-quality home-prepared meal per serving tends to cost less than an inexpensive fast food meal, less expensive. You just, yes, you need time, you need preparation. It needs to be, you know, one of the family values that, that we prepare food at home and we sit down together for dinner. The other thing is, Tommy, that this is often discussed but seldom studied. My research lab actually did a study on the cost of more and less nutritious food some years ago. We published this paper in Public Health Nutrition, and we actually found that more nutritious versions of almost every food in every aisle of the supermarket were available that did not cost any more. It's just that people didn't know how to identify the more nutritious food. So it's more a food label literacy problem than a cost problem. And then finally, some of the most nutritious foods available to all of us are some of the least expensive. So if you eat more beans or lentils and less beef and cuts of meat, massive savings there. And massively better nutrition. If you drink more water and less soda, massive savings there, massively better nutrition. So yeah, to, you know, to get fresh produce, for example, you'd spend more money, but some of the more nutritious foods would actually help save your life and save you money. So it's a lot of urban legend that you've got to spend more money to eat better.
Doc,
it's a little bit true, but a lot false.
I just want to cram as much in as I can because we only have you for the rest of the hour. Somebody asked about you addressing the keto diet. And I, for the life of me, I don't see how eating a pound of bacon or a side of beef is going to be healthy for you.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there's no evidence that it is. What we know about the keto diet is it's severely restricted. It limits your food choices quite massively. And any approach to doing that produces weight loss in the short term. And our society is gullible enough to think as long as something produces weight loss in the short term, it must be good for me. I routinely point out to people that a bout of cholera or a cocaine binge would produce weight loss in the short term. That does not make them a good idea.
Yeah, to be clear, so, yeah, you're not advocating that. Let's just be clear.
Quite the opposite. Yeah. I'm advocating against those, and I'm advocating against any quick fix, silly fad, highly restricted diet that you don't feel you could comfortably share with your children or your octogenarian parents, you know, if it's not, or somebody who's pregnant, you know, if it's not safe enough for them, what makes it a good idea for you? Yeah, I think, you know, our society is fixated on these short-term quick fixes to the permanent problem of learning to love food that loves us back, eat well for the long haul.
And you know, I know somebody, a couple of people have been on a keto diet and they're heavier now. They lost the weight initially. Now they're heavier than they were before. And I would think that has something to do with the bliss point, because if you're eating nothing but bacon and steaks and everything you really love, it's hard to kind of not leak over in the...
Yeah, no, I don't think it's that, Tommy. I think what happens, is for every action, an equal and opposite reaction. I think it's just simple Newtonian physics, if you will. If you go on a highly restricted diet for as long as you can stand it, the minute you go off, you binge like crazy. Everybody I've ever known, you know, again, I've been taking care of patients for a quarter century. Everybody I've ever known who's gone on a highly restricted diet eventually goes off and gains back more weight than they lost. So it's just time, you know, we've got to learn from the follies of history and stop doing the same silly stuff in different ways. Learn how to eat well for the rest of your life. Do not go on a diet. If you have life or health threatening severe obesity, see a health professional and address that. Otherwise, focus on learning to eat well for the long haul, because a restrictive diet will last a little while. You will lose weight, and then you'll gain it back with interest. That's what always happens.
We're out of time. Somebody texted in about the name of the book. It is what again, Doc?
The Truth About Food, Why Pandas Eat Bamboo and People Get Bamboozled.
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. I'm looking at quinzenicity.com. Grilled orange herb chicken. That looks pretty good. Carrot cider baked chicken. Mini barbecue turkey burgers. Shrimp Augusta Provençal. Man, I got some nice looking stuff here. Orange, spinach, wild salmon. So it doesn't have to be tasteless. It can be good as well.
It's great. My wife's a real foodie. So absolutely check them out. And family-friendly recipes, too. Tommy, pleasure being with you.
As always, sir. Hope you come back. And this will be available on a podcast at WWL.com. David Katz, he's the founder of the Health Initiative, a doctor at Yale University, 952. Back in a flash here, WWL.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.